Last week was Halloween, which I talked about on this program, but it was also notable, well, in my mind anyway, for a birthday, that of former President Theodore Roosevelt. The specific date is October 27th, and Mr. Roosevelt was born in 1858 in Manhattan, New York. President Roosevelt's name has come up a bunch in my classroom visits over the past month or so, for various reasons, and his name is often never far from my job anyway. For many of you, the tie I refer to is probably pretty obvious. President Roosevelt was the guy who had the clout to kickstart the whole National Wildlife Refuge system, which happened in 1903 with the creation of Pelican Island National Wildlife Refuge near Sebastian, Florida. Not one content to rest on his laurels, well, more on that in a bit, he went on to create 55 refuges, 42 million acres of national forest, and 18 areas of special interest, including the Grand Canyon, before leaving the White House. For a lot of people, what they probably know of Roosevelt was that he wore both spectacles and a mustache, and he famously said, with regards to foreign policy, "Speak softly and carry a big stick." Today, as a belated birthday sort of thing, let's dig a bit deeper than what might be your cobwebbed high school history memory of our 26th president. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. There are some basic in-the-headline sorts of things that folks probably remember, with a little prodding, about Theodore Roosevelt. As stated, he was our 26th president, taking over when President William McKinley was assassinated in 1901. He was 42 at the time and already had a reputation for being a no-nonsense, high-energy sort. He had gained fame a few years earlier for being a hero of the Spanish-American War. His efforts and bravery earned him the Medal of Honor during that conflict. In his capacity as president, the U.S. came to have a much greater influence globally, and it wasn't all brute-level Neanderthal stuff, though he wanted the world to understand how capable he saw us as being. For example, he won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1906 for his efforts in international arbitration, and he was all about getting things done, such as all those refuges and national lands and other things, such as the construction of the Panama Canal. Frankly, there are a lot of really big things he's known for. I'd like to focus on some of what may have been lesser-known facts about who Theodore Roosevelt was, things that I think we can admire him for today. If you ever want to feel like you need some motivation to do something more with your life, take the time to look up and read some of what Roosevelt packed into his 60 years on Earth. It was well beyond ample. And his life really started out with something of a whimper. He was born to parents who were able to provide for him, and his father was, by all accounts, a doting man who sought to give his kids every chance to succeed. So he did have that going for him. He was a frail child, stricken with asthma. Back then, not a lot was known about the condition, and it was sometimes fatal. Some of the early ideas for controlling it were pretty wild, including drinking strongly caffeinated beverages and smoking cigars, which was thought to open up the air passages. His dad would take him on nighttime rides, hoping the night air would help him to breathe. Additionally, his eyesight was downright awful. He was extremely nearsighted, and at age 13 began to wear glasses. His dad knew he had a sharp son and encouraged him to work to build up his body, and he did. He and his father built a gym in the house where he would box and lift weights. He liked hiking and would climb mountains in all sorts of weather. Certainly, his beginning to life was not what you'd expect out of someone that went on to become what many folks think of as one of the toughest men to ever live. There are many aspects of his life that I admire him for, beyond the obvious items I've mentioned that point to his strong sense of patriotism for our country. For example, he was a voracious reader. I like to read as much as I can, and if I'm being honest, I do probably read a bit above the norm. I base that on a nationwide survey I saw that said most Americans read something like 4 books a year, or a little more. Almost a fourth of those surveyed hadn't read a book at all for the year questioned. I go through maybe 4 to 6 novels a month, in addition to some lesser content books, magazines, and whatever I happen to read online. Theodore Roosevelt, now there was a reader, perhaps the most prolific to ever hold the office of president. By his own count, he read tens of thousands of books over the course of his life. He had a known habit of reading a book each day before breakfast, and 2 or 3 later in the day, and he was open to all sorts of genres. Famed poet Robert Frost, he of the "I Took the Path Less Traveled" poem, once said of Roosevelt, "He was our kind. He quoted poetry to me. He knew poetry." On top of the reading he packed into his life, he was also a prolific author, credited with having written 18 books. Reading and writing? I can understand and get behind that. Totally. He was a dedicated father, and he got plenty of practice with it, with a total of 6 kids. A daughter from his first marriage, his wife died shortly after childbirth, and 4 sons and another daughter by his second wife. While in the White House, his kids had a lot of freedom kids today don't have. Pets as large as ponies actually wandered the White House, and there was always an ongoing litany of practical jokes. I saw one historian say it was basically his own personal circus, and from other things I've read, he was pretty much the ringleader. He encouraged his kids to be active outside and taught them the activities and lessons that were important to him. Needless to say, he passed along his love of reading and often told stories in the evening. Having so many kids often made the White House seem like, well, a home with a lot of kids, as much as you might see around Bristol Bay today. His oldest daughter, Alice, would often pop into the Oval Office, interrupting whatever was going on. One day, the president, exhausted, threatened to throw her out a window if she did it again. He is quoted as having said, "I can either run the country or I can attend to Alice, but I cannot possibly do both." He was also a man who knew how to be alone, and I very much appreciate that about him. I consider myself to be much more introvert than extrovert. Some of my happiest times have come in the most remote places, with few if any other souls around me. Theodore Roosevelt sought solace in the wide open after the death of his first wife, a day on which his mother also passed away. To deal with his grief, he moved out west to North Dakota, bought a couple of ranches, a whole lot of cattle, and took up ranching, using a frontier lifestyle to work off his grief. He did this for 2 years. He flourished in the hardships of the western frontier. He'd ride for days dealing with his cattle. He also hunted grizzly bears and other large game and even worked for a time as a frontier sheriff. One of the most obvious things I admire about him was the passion he had for hunting. He is rightfully considered one of the greatest conservationists our country has ever produced, and his record while in the White House is a testament to his commitment to that conservation. But make no mistake, he loved to hunt, and packed a lot more into his life than many of us ever will. He hunted widely throughout North America, and went on an epic African safari the year after he left the White House. One of his last big game animals, near the end of his life, was a moose he shot in Canada. Somewhere way back, I read an account of the harvest of that animal that said it charged his guide and Roosevelt shot and killed it before it could get to the guide. In the photo, posing with the antlers, he can be seen holding one of his favorite rifles, a Winchester Model 1895, possibly in .405 Winchester, as that was one of his favorite calibers. Fact is, an 1895 and .405 remains a bucket list item for me, and a lot of my desire for one can be traced to that time period. The fact that I like lever guns in general, and that it was what Roosevelt hunted with. I have mentioned that Roosevelt was tough. He overcame some pretty severe maladies in his youth. In fact, after graduating from college, he was advised by a doctor that he had a weak heart and needed to seek out a desk job that would provide him with a sedentary lifestyle. His response was, "Doctor, I'm going to do all the things you tell me not to do. If I've got to live the sort of life you have described, I don't care how short it is." A year after graduating, during his honeymoon in Europe, he climbed the 15,000-foot Matterhorn. He was blind in his left eye for much of his adult life, the result of a boxing injury. And in his later life, he suffered from long-term illnesses, tropical stuff, contracted during a long journey through South America. But my favorite, "He Was a Bad Dude" story about Roosevelt was the story of his assassination attempt made on him that left him with a bullet in his chest for the rest of his life. In 1912, while campaigning in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for the newly formed Bull Moose Party, Roosevelt was shot in the chest. A copy of his speech in his glasses case slowed the bullet down. Roosevelt, consummate hunter that he was, took a look at the blood and determined while the bullet was in his chest, it wasn't in an area likely to be fatal. After the assailant was taken into custody, he opened his speech with, "Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know whether you fully understand that I have just been shot, but it takes more than that to kill a bull moose. He went on to speak for 90 minutes before he let them take him to the hospital. Because removal of the bullet was decided to be more dangerous than just leaving it, Roosevelt carried that bullet with him for the rest of his life. Tough indeed. I'll end today with a couple of quotes I've always liked, and I think they could and do serve us well today, over 100 years later. Here's the first. The first requisite of a good citizen in this republic of ours is that he shall be able and willing to pull his weight. The other one. Far better is it to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs even though checkered by failure, than to take rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy much nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that knows neither victory nor defeat. Happy belated birthday, Mr. President. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.